After the Aldrich women were brought to Puma's cabin and were given some venison and coffee, Smoke asked Pearlie if he would escort him down to Big Rock to see Doc Spaulding. Pearlie raised his eyebrows.
What about Cal?
I reckon he can stay up here for a while. Maybe Puma can teach him some trail craft while I set my traps and prepare for the arrival of Sundance and his gang.
But Smoke...
No buts, Pearlie. You know Cal can't manage that buckboard by himself, and you can. Now, the sooner you get done, the sooner you can get back up here. I wouldn't want you to miss all the excitement.
Both the Aldrich women thanked Smoke, which caused him to blush mightily.
You tell Doc Spaulding to give you anything you need.
Pearlie drove the wagon away. Puma shook his head.
I ain't never had so much damn company in one time in all my born days. Getting too damn crowded around here.
Sundance Morgan reined in his mount and sat with his palms resting on his saddle horn, staring ahead through the heat waves and dust devils on the trail, thinking about what lay before him. His gang pulled their horses to a halt and gathered around him. The animals' sides heaved and they shook sweat from their necks, exhausted from the ride.
Señor Sundance, why we stop?
Just over that next ridge is the town of Big Rock. I'm deciding how we should handle it.
Pedro Muerte pulled a Colt from his holster and held it up, barrel pointed at the sky.
This is one way. It's sure to get their attention.
I don't think so. Not just yet. I believe we ought to just ride in, peaceable as can be. Get the lay of the land first.
Sundance put his hat back on and settled it low. His eyes sparkled with hatred and remembered shame.
Then if we don't get what we want, we'll have some fun and do some damage.
Yeah!
He spurred his bronc and the others followed, raising a cloud of dust in still, dry air. Matt and Timmy O'Leary, 13 and 14-year-old brothers, pulled their ponies up in front of Sheriff Monty Carson's jail in Big Rock.
Sheriff Carson! Sheriff Carson, come quick!
Monty stepped to the door of the jail, pipe in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other.
Okay, boys, calm down. Tell me what's got you so riled up.
Big cloud of dust, about 5 or 6 miles out of town. Looks like it might be that gang we was watching for.
You boys did good. Ride on down to the blacksmith shop and ring the fire bell like we planned. That'll let everyone know the time has come.
Gee, Mr. Carson, you gonna let us ring the bell?
Sure. You gave the warning, so you get to ring the bell. Tell Smitty I told you to do it. He'll understand. Afterwards, you get your butts on home and stay off the street till I tell you it's okay to come out.
Sure thing, Sheriff.
Monty took a deep drag on his pipe. Then he spoke to his deputy.
Jim, looks like it's about that time. Hand me my greener, will you? We got to get to our stations as soon as we can.
Monty took his 10-gauge scatter gun from Jim and sat in his chair on the boardwalk in front of the jail. He put his coffee down, loosened the rawhide thongs to his Colts, and leaned his chair back against the wall. He placed a greener across his lap, both hammers jacked back, stuck his pipe in his mouth, and waited.
I hope we're doing the right thing.
Louis Longmont drew 3 cards to a pair of queens. As he spread them out, he noticed he had drawn 2 sevens and another queen. He displayed no emotion at all over his good fortune. He picked up a cigar and fingered a stack of chips, ready to bet his hand.
Damn their timing.
Yet another reason to hate Sundance Morgan. Louis flipped the pasteboards to the table face down.
You're a pot, James. Game's over.
Coming to his feet, he motioned to his barkeeper and the women around his saloon to take their places. 2 of the girls took small belly guns out of their handbags and sat at tables on either side of the bat wings. His young waiter took an old shotgun with rusted barrels off a rack and went upstairs, finding a spot next to a window overlooking the street below. Jonathan, the barkeep, put a .44 Colt in his waistband behind his back and stood, wiping the bar with a rag and whistling to himself.
Andre, come out here, please.
The chef appeared a moment later, apron tied around his ample stomach.
Andre, under no circumstances are you to come out of the kitchen. You understand?
Oh, but sir, I want to do my part. What if you get shot? What will I do,
Andre, the world can easily do without a gambler and roustabout like me. But civilization can ill afford to lose a master chef of your talent. Believe me, I will not abide you risking your life in this matter. Now, if my nose does not deceive me, you have a souffle in the oven that needs your immediate attention.
Andre smiled at the compliment and departed to his beloved kitchen, swaggering as he walked away. Sundance rode into Big Rock, his men spread out behind him, riding six abreast, 43 men in all. They were a rough bunch, and he knew it. All wore their guns tied down low, and most carried rifles or shotguns braced upright on their thighs or lying across saddle horns.
Something's terribly wrong in this place.
Sundance had ridden through dozens of western towns in his years on the Owl Hoot Trail. Some were big, and some were small enough to throw a stone from one end to the other. But none was like this one. There were no people on the streets, no children or dogs. And no cowboys on horseback or folks in buckboards loading supplies.
Boss, I'm beginning to feel like Custer must have felt riding into Little Bighorn.
I know the feeling, Jack. Something ain't right here, that's for sure.
Sundance looked to one side as they neared the jail and saw the only sign of life in town. A man was sitting there, his chair tilted back and legs outstretched on the hitching rail. His pipe was emitting a thin trail of smoke, and his hand was on the shotgun in his lap.
Hey, boss, take a peek at his shotguns.
Sundance turned and saw the rawhide thongs pulled back from the hammers of a pair of Colts. He gritted his jaw. He did not like the look of things.
Howdy, Sheriff. How are things?
Hello, Sundance. Things are just fine. How about with you?
Tolerable, Sheriff. Carson's your handle, ain't it?
Yep. I'm honored that you remember. Because last time you was here, you left in such a rush, I didn't get to give you your ear back. I tried to save it for you, but a dog ate it before I could get to it.
Speaking of that incident, Sheriff, where is Smoke Jensen these days? I kind of like to pay him a visit.
I know you'd like to pay him a social call, Sundance, but I'll bet he'll like it a whole bunch more than you will. He heard you were coming, so he went up into the High Lonesome to wait for you. Said to give you his regards, and to tell you he'd be somewhere close to that tall peak to the east. Of course, though none of us who know you think you'll have the guts to go up after him, no matter how many men you have backing you up.
You know, Sheriff Carson, you shouldn't let your mouth overrun your ass. I got over 40 men with me here, and you got, what, 2 shots in that express gun of yours?
I'm not worried. You see, the first barrel, the one on the right here, is loaded with buckshot. As for you, I figure there won't be enough of you left to fill a coffee cup after I unload on your belly. The second barrel, the one on the left, is also loaded with buckshot. But it's for that big, stupid-looking gent right next to you. The one with the jug-handle ears.
Bull's eyes widened, and his hands clenched and unclenched in helpless anger. He knew that if he drew, he'd be dead before he cleared leather.
What about the rest of these men, Sheriff? They'll kill you where you sit before you reach for those pistols.
We've been ready. You asked about the rest of your men?
Doorways all along the street filled with citizens, armed to the teeth with rifles, shotguns, and pistols. Heads popped up on roofs and behind eaves and elevated storefronts, and gun-toting men appeared in alleys and between buildings.
Hey, backshooter! Remember me?
Sundance twisted in his saddle to glance over his shoulder. He saw a tall, slim man dressed in a black split-tail coat and a ruffle-front shirt with 2 Colts slung low on his hips. Then he recognized him as Lewis Longmont, hands hanging at his sides, fingers flexing in anticipation.
That's correct, Lester Morgan. I'm calling you a coward.
Well, fuck me sideways. Now's not the time, Longmont.
When is the proper time for you, coward? How about those sons of whores who ride with you? Are they chicken shit like you? Don't any of you men have any balls?
Several of the men on horseback drew their weapons, unable to take the insults any longer. Sundance held up his hands, trying to stop them, warning them it was a trick, but his men were too angry to listen. Carson's scattergun exploded as he pulled both triggers and rolled out of his chair.
Yeah!
Bull filled his hand with iron. Two sawed-off shotguns both firing at Carson.
Yeah!
Sundance leaned over his horse's neck and spurred hell for leather down the street. Lewis took careful aim, firing both his Colts at Sundance. One of his .44 bullets sliced a chunk out of Sundance's butt. Bull, his shotguns empty, reined his horse into an alleyway and rode out of town. Pedro Muerte was having his own troubles. Wounded in the arm and thigh in the initial volley of gunfire and his horse shot out from under him, he was kneeling in the dusty street, firing his Colt at anything that moved. He picked up a blood-splattered rifle and wheeled around. A member of the gang, Charlie Wilson, was riding by, firing pistols with both hands. Without hesitation, Pedro Muerte swung the rifle in a horizontal arc, slamming Wilson backwards out of the saddle and shattering his jaw. Pedro Muerte got lucky and managed to grab the mount's reins. Slim Johnson didn't have to worry about returning to New Mexico and being hung. As he was riding out of town, firing over his shoulder, one of the ladies who sang in the church choir stepped out of a doorway, leveled her husband's Henry repeating rifle, and blew him to hell.
Yeah!
As Toothpick spurred down the street, ducking and leaning to the side to avoid bullets, he saw Lewis standing on the boardwalk shooting at Sundance. Toothpick drew his long knife from its scabbard and threw it at Lewis with all his might as he passed. He saw the blade embed itself into Lewis's chest, knocking him backward. He fell on the boardwalk. The Battle of Big Rock lasted only a few minutes, but when it was over, 12 desperados lay dead or dying, 3 townspeople were killed, and 6 were wounded. Monte Carson got to his knees, his Colt's and Express gun empty, and peered through the gun smoke, nose wrinkling at the smell of cordite and blood and voided bowels. His attention was drawn to his friend Lewis, whose body he could see lying on the boards with a knife stuck in his chest.
Oh, no. God, don't let this be.
Monty limped painfully around the bodies of men and horses, running to see if he was too late to help. He bent over the body and grabbed Lewis's shoulders, blood from his own wounds dripping onto his friend's chest.
Lewis, can you hear me?
Of course I can hear you, Monty. I'm wounded, not deaf.
What?
Lewis grabbed Monty's arm and pulled himself to a sitting position. He jerked the knife out of his chest, then reached into his coat and removed a sterling silver flask with a knife hole in it.
Damn. That was 12-year-old scotch.
Well, Lewis, how'd we do?
This town did fine, my old friend. Just fine. The rest is up to Smoke Jensen.
Jessica Aldrich was sitting next to Pearlie on the buckboard seat. She cocked her head. The sky at these lower altitudes was a brilliant azure blue with small puffs of white cloud scattered from horizon to horizon like tufts of cotton waiting to be picked.
Mr. Pearlie, what is that noise? Sounds like thunder, but I don't see any stoneware.
Twerk thunder, Mrs. Aldrich. That there was gunfire. A lot of it, and it's coming from Big Rock.
Big Rock? Isn't that where we're going?
Yes, ma'am.
Think it might be Indians?
Not likely, ma'am. What few Indians we got left around here might attack a small party if they was hungry enough, but there ain't hardly a band anywhere in these parts big enough to try to take on a whole town.
Aileen Aldrich, bundled in back under bear skins and wrapped in a buffalo robe Pearlie borrowed from Puma Buck, raised her head and looked around, a dazed expression on her face. She was not yet fully recovered from the ordeal she endured at the hands of the men at the mine.
Jessica, why are we stopping? Have we arrived at our destination already?
No, Mama Aldrich. Mr. Pearlie is just giving the horses a rest. You go on back to sleep. We'll wake you when we get there.
Pearlie sat still, reins in his hands, forehead wrinkled in thought, considering his options. Finally, he decided his best course of action was to relate his concerns to Jessica.
Mrs. Aldrich, I think those gunshots are from a band of desperados. A bad bunch from down south.
You mean outlaws?
Yes, ma'am. We got word a couple of weeks ago they was on their way up here from Texas. They're looking for Smoke Jensen and intend to kill him.
They want to kill Mr. Jensen. But why?
It's a long story, ma'am. I'll tell you later when I get you two to town safe and sound.
He looked around trying to find a suitable place to hide the buckboard and women.
Yeah, the trouble is, if those men survive the fighting in town, they're going to be coming this way, headed up into the high country looking for Smoke.
Oh, I see. You're concerned that if they see us, they might do us some harm.
You can near about count on it, ma'am. Those men are some of the low-downest, meanest God ever put on this earth. If they see us, they'll kill us, sure. At least they'll kill me. I expect they'll have other plans for you and your mom-in-law.
Oh, dear God.
Not to worry, ma'am. They got to find us first.
Pearlie surveyed the area again, eyes flicking back and forth. They were near the boundary of the forest. Another quarter mile and they would be on the plain surrounding Big Rock, wide sweeping expanses of short grass with no cover to conceal them. Pearlie pulled hard on the reins, turning the team in a wide circle, and headed back the way they had come. After 100 yards, he came to an overgrown path leading off the main trail to the east. It wasn't much more than a mule trace, once used by miners to pack supplies from town up to their camps on the upper peaks. It would be a tight fit, but he thought they just might be able to squeeze through the narrow spots.
It's gonna get a mite bumpy. Why don't you get in the back with your mama and help hold her while I try to get us out of sight?
Jessica nodded, and without another word, she scrambled into the rear of the wagon to wrap her arms around Aileen.
Mama Aldrich, Mr. Pearlie is going to take a shortcut through the forest. Hold on to me, dear, because it may get a trifle rough.
Slowly, Pearlie drove him up the path, holding his reins in one hand and the side of the buckboard with the other, to keep from being thrown off as it tilted and rocked over rocks and mud holes along the trail. When he had gone a half mile deeper into the piney woods, he pulled the team to a halt. Reaching behind the seat, he grabbed his Henry repeating rifle and jumped to the ground.
I'm going back down the road to cover our back trail. If anything happens and I don't come back, Big Rock is about 3 or 4 miles in that direction. Just unhitch the horses and ride on in. Folks there will take good care of you.
Mr. Pearlie, don't you worry about us. We're miners' wives. We can take care of ourselves. But you be careful, you hear? We don't want anything to happen to you on our account.
Oh, I'll be careful as a tomcat in a room full of rocking chairs, Mrs. Aldrich. And I'll be back for you, I promise.
Pearlie turned, drew his knife from its scabbard, and cut a low-hanging branch off a nearby pine tree. Using it like a broom, he backed down the path, sweeping dirt with the branch to obliterate any signs of their passage. When he got to a turn off the mountain trail, he piled dead branches and bushes over his wagon tracks, hiding them from sight. Finally satisfied that the buckboard's prints were erased as well as they could be in such a short time, he walked to a bald knob and looked back toward Big Rock. Shading his eyes with his hand, he could see a dark blot of a man on horseback in the distance, riding hard toward the mountain and raising a sizable dust cloud. He moved 100 yards farther up the trail and slipped into the forest, hiding himself behind a large bush. He worked a lever on his Henry, jacking a shell into the chamber, and loosened the thongs on his Colts. He intended to fire on the group only as a last resort, if they looked like they were about to find the road they had taken or if any of them turned toward the spot where he had hidden the Aldrich women. After a short wait, he peered through the branches and leaves covering his hiding place to watch riders slow their mounts to a walk as they entered the forest. Pearlie's heart pounded and light sweat beaded his forehead running down his cheeks when the band stopped and several of the gunhawks dismounted a few yards from the hidden turnoff of the mule path. Pearlie brought his Henry to his shoulder and drew a bead on the man who seemed to be the leader of the gang.
Well, if nothing else, I can blow Sundance Morgan back to hell where he came from. Maybe then the rest of his men will go on back to Texas and leave Smoke alone.
Sundance eased off his mount, holding a blood-soaked bandana to his butt. He limped over to El Gato's horse and jerked a bottle of tequila out of his saddlebag. Dropping his pants and long johns to his knees, Sundance poured the fiery liquid over his wound.
God damn, that hurts!
Lightning Jack helped Perro Muerte off his bronc and laid him on his back in the dirt.
You got lucky, Carlito. Looks like the bullet missed the bone.
He took Carlito's bandana off his neck and tied it in a knot around his leg, slowing the flow of blood to a trickle. He grinned at the Mexican, who clamped his eyes shut in pain.
Good thing there ain't no Confederate sawbones with us, Carlito, or they'd try and hack that leg off real quick.
Señor Sundance, give me tequila, rápido.
You want me to pour some on your leg?
No.
Suarez raised himself on one elbow and tilted the bottle to the sky, draining the rest of the liquid in two large swallows.
It works better from the inside.
As the rest of the men attended to their wounds and reloaded their weapons, Pearly silently lowered his Henry.
Oh, come on, you bastards, get a move on.
Even from this distance, he could see where ruts from the buckboard wheels and his team's hoofprints ended, just short of the path. He mouthed a silent prayer the gang wouldn't notice how the track suddenly disappeared. After another 10 minutes, Sundance climbed on his horse.
Let's go, men. We'll ride till we find a suitable place to make camp. I figure a day or so we'll heal up and lick our wounds. Then we can plan on how to take care of Smoke Jensen.
Mr. Morgan, I didn't plan on getting the crap shot out of me when I joined up. I think I'll just mosey down the trail and look for an easier way to make some money.
Bull, I want you to kill any son of a bitch who tries to leave. You bastards took my money and agreed to do a job. Nobody quits until that job is done, and that means till Smoke Jensen's been dusted through and through. You got two choices. You can ride with me and maybe get shot later, or you can try to leave and damn sure get killed now. Any arguments?
Bull sat rock still, his hands on the butts of his sawed-off shotguns, watching closely as Sundance's men nodded agreement one by one.
Okay, let's go.
Pearly mopped his face with his bandana as the gang rode off up the trail. He let the hammer down on his Henry when the outlaws disappeared from sight. He stood and walked along the path toward the spot where he left the women. As he made a bend in the trail, he saw Jessica lying on her stomach in the buckboard, aiming a Colt over the side at him. He raised his hands, grinning.
It's okay, ma'am. It's just me.
It took Pearly almost an hour, sweating and fighting his team, to get the wagon turned around in the narrow passage. While on their way down the mountain, he had Jessica keep an eye on their back trail in case the outlaws returned. After another hour and a half, they drove up at the outskirts of town. When Pearly pulled his team into Big Rock, he found Monte Carson and Louis Longmont standing before a collection of bodies, lined up for all the world like cordwood on the boardwalk for viewing. Monty had his left arm in a sling, and Lewis had his coat off, wearing a white shirt with a deep red stain in front. Pearly introduced Jessica and Aileen Aldrich to the men and explained briefly what had happened to him in the mountains and how Smoke had sent him down to Big Rock for medical attention.
Ladies, Dr. Spaulding is busy now. He's removing some bullets from citizens injured in our little fracas. If you'll permit me, I'll escort you to my establishment and have my chef prepare you some nourishment. By the time you finish your meal, I'm sure the doctor will be able to see you. Pearly, Monty can fill you in on what happened here. I'll take the ladies with me and see that they're cared for properly. Then I'll arrange for them to stay at the boarding house. I'll also have Andre throw a couple of beefsteaks and some potatoes on the fire for you. You look like you could use some food.
Appears y'all had a little excitement here.
Yep. These old boys never knew what hit them. I figured we softened them up a little for Smoke.
That you did, and he's gonna need it. I ran into the gang after you got through with them, and they look like some of the hardest-looking men I ever seed.
As hard as Smoke?
Well, ain't nobody alive as hard as Smoke Jensen.
What you gonna do now, Pearly?
I'm gonna eat those steaks, Lewis offered. Then I'm heading back up the mountain to see if I can be of any assistance to Smoke.
You be careful, son. Try not to find Sundance before you locate Smoke.
Don't worry, I'm gonna take the back way up. Puma told me how to get up there without going by a clear trail.
Well, you take care anyway. Let Smoke know the whole town's praying for him.
Y'all'll do better praying for them outlaws. I got a feeling Smoke's gonna be doing some fall plant.
Smoke and Cal rode side by side through a ponderosa pine forest. Their mounts had an easy walk as they discussed the upcoming battle.
Just how much did you know about Indians, Cal?
Well, I know they're dangerous, sneaky, and unpredictable as hell. One time they can be friendly and neighborly, and the next time you meet up with them, they'll try and take your scalp.
Yeah, they can be real changeable. Preacher used to call it being notionable. Cal, this country is perfect for the type of fighting Indians showed us.
What do you mean, Smoke? I thought Indians fought just like everybody else, except when they used bows and arrows before they had rifles.
No, Cal, that's where you're wrong. Indians and white men have completely different ideas about how to wage war. The white man has always put his faith in superior numbers and better weapons to defeat an enemy. An Indian, on the other hand, uses stealth and fear and knowledge of the countryside to make up for fewer numbers and more primitive weapons.
But isn't our way better? After all, we've managed to beat the Indian tribes and damn near wipe them out.
You're right, Cal. In the long run, large numbers of soldiers and better guns and rifles will eventually win out. But in the short run, the Indians' tactics of hit and run, sneak attacks at night, avoiding pitched battles, exacts a horrible toll on winners. That's why long ago, mountain men adopted the Indians' ways of fighting. It was the only way to survive against them. Hell, when you think on it, I'll bet red men have killed 10 or more whites for every brave they lost in battle. If we didn't have a steady stream of settlers coming here from back east, the Indians would have run us off years ago.
So what you're saying is that to beat Sundance and his gang, we're going to have to fight him like we was Injuns?
That's exactly what I mean, Cal. There's simply no way two or three of us stand a chance in a battle with 30 or 40 experienced gun hands if we play by their rules. So, we fight this war like an Apache.
What does that mean?
It's something an old Indian taught me last time I was up here fighting a bunch of bounty hunters who had us outmanned and outgunned. Me and Louis Longmont took them on, one by one and two by two, and managed to kill or run every one of them off. We fought smart and cautious, and used these mountains and forests of the High Lonesome to help us whip them.
But Smoke, I don't know nothing about fighting like some Indian.
You'll learn, Cal, because I'm going to teach you, just like the best Indian fighter who ever lived, Preacher, who taught me.
Oh, when do we start?
We've already started. We leave no traces of our passage. When we move through an area, no one can know we've been there, unless we want them to know.
Oh, I see. You mean like covering our tracks and such?
Yeah, but it's more than just that. It's making sure that we don't break branches or twigs. We walk our mounts around boggy or muddy spots so we don't leave prints. And we never camp where we make our fires. Matter of fact, when the going gets hot and heavy, we'll probably be eating cold food more often than not and doing without fires.
I guess that means being cold ourselves most of the time, too.
If you're going to wage war in the High Lonesome, being cold is part of it. But you'll get used to it before those galoots from Texas do. They're more used to frying in the heat than shivering in the cold. And that'll be to our advantages when the time comes. Let's go. We're burning daylight.
Smoke wheeled his mount to ride up the mountain and began moving toward the peaks.
I'm going to take you to where we'll make our last stand, assuming we both live long enough to get there. On the way, I'll show you some of the traps and falls I've set up, and how to spot them if you have to get out of there on your own.
I don't much like it when you talk like that, Smoke. About us maybe not surviving and such.
I can see where it'd bother you, Cal, but it's the truth of the matter. I want you to understand what we're going up against here. Because this ain't no Sunday school picnic. And it sure as hell ain't no kid's game where you get up after you get shot bad to try again. This here's for real, Cal. Only a few men are gonna ride out of this fracas forked end down. I hope it's you and Pearly and Puma and me. But it's liable to be Sundance who pisses on our graves, not the other way around.
Smoke, I ain't afraid of dying. I'm more afraid of not being good enough and doing more harm than good by being up here with you. I don't want you to get hurt because you're having to look after me.
Don't worry about that, son. Everybody gets a mite nervous for a battle. But once the lead starts to fly, your natural instincts will take over, and you'll do just fine. If I didn't believe you were up to what's going to happen, I wouldn't let you stay. And I'm a damn good judge of character.
Cal sat a little straighter in his saddle and began to look for traps Smoke had set. He wanted to find some without Smoke having to show him where they were, to prove to his friend he was worthy of his trust. After a few miles, he reined up.
What's that ahead of us?
What are you looking at?
Oh, right there, near the pine tree. That pile of leaves and pine needles kind of looks like it was piled up there on purpose.
Cal stepped out of his saddle and walked slowly up to the tree, squatting before it, leaning down.
Uh-huh. Here's a rope covered with mud or something wrapped around the trunk.
Cal followed the rope with his hands where it ran along the ground across the trail to encircle another tree and finally to where it was tied to a branch, holding it back under tension.
Jumping Jiminy Smoke, if we tripped this here rope, it would have let that branch go and it would have damn near taken our heads off.
You're learning, Cal. That's exactly what it's meant to do. Let's hope the gun slicks aren't as keen-eyed as you.
I'd have never seen it if and I weren't looking for it.
Don't let up. There's a few more between us and our destination.
Cal managed to find two more of three traps on the way to where Smoke had left his supplies. Smoke had to stop him before he walked his mount onto a thin covering over a pit Smoke dug in the middle of a mountain path. And even after he was shown the trap, Cal stated he could not tell it from what looked natural. They came to Smoke's fort, as he called it, at noon. Smoke figured it would be a good time to take their nooning.
Want me to gather wood for a campfire?
Remember what I told you? We don't make a fire where we're going to camp.
But Smoke, they ain't hardly had time to get up here yet.
You're probably right, Cal. But are you willing to bet your life that they haven't sent a scout or a party of gunmen on ahead, riding hard to try and catch us unawares?
When you say it like that, I reckon not.
No, and I'm not either. This is a game with high stakes, life or death, and it don't do to underestimate your opponent. We won't get any second chances, so we better be right every time.
They staked their horses on the trail below and hiked up the steep incline to a level spot at the top, stumbling some on loose soil. They surveyed the approach.
I picked this place for its defense. We've got an unobstructed view in front and both sides, and our back is covered by those cliffs behind us. A rock slide sometime back took out the trees and brush on the hill to the front, and there aren't any boulders or tree trunks big enough for our attackers to hide behind while working their way up here. We've got over 150 yards of clear space they'll have to cross to get to us on foot, because it's too deep for horses. Not quite as good over the sides. There's some good-sized rocks and a couple of fallen trees over there, but I'm going to let you hide a few surprises in that cover there in case our friends decide to try and use them.
What kind of surprises?
You'll get no help from me. I'll show you what we got to work with, and you let your imagination take it from there. Hell, if you can't cook up something mean, then I may have to change my opinion about the natural contrariness of young men.
You say you got some extra dynamite and a few cans of black powder?
Yep. And there's a pile of gourds and small pumpkins and rocks I gathered the other day.
Cal pointed to several areas and explained in detail what he had in mind to Smoke, causing the older man to grin in anticipation.
You know, Cal, you almost make me hope some of those outlaws make it this far, just so we can see if your plan works.
Me too, boss.
Smoke opened his saddlebags and broke out some jerked meat and biscuits he had saved from breakfast, along with a few dried apples. They washed their food down with water from the canteens. After they finished eating, Smoke gave Cal a tour of his caches of guns, rifles, shotguns, ammunition, and explosives that he had placed in various locations around his plateau.
I've spread the supplies around because I don't know how many are going to be coming up after us. And I don't have any way of knowing if we're going to be wounded or able to move around much if they're firing on us real heavy.
Cal followed Smoke as he showed him where everything was located, nodding his head at the meticulous planning that had gone into the arrangement.
Looks like you thought of most everything, Smoke.
I doubt it, because you can never anticipate all the possibilities. But I'm damned if I can't think of anything else to do up here to prepare for an assault. Now, we've set about making more tricks for Sundance and his gang. That's the other part of fighting like Indians, instilling fear of the unknown in your adversaries.
They slipped and slid down the embankment to their horses and mounted up. Smoke inclined his head at his bedroll.
I've got an extra pair of moccasins and some buckskins in there, so remind me to give them to you later. We're going to be doing some sneaking around, and I want you to be as quiet as a mouse and as close to invisible as I can make you in the dark. Get rid of your spurs and anything else that jangles or clinks when you're crawling around on your hands and knees. We'll also get you some mud to put on your weapons, just in case the clouds clear and get some moonlight. We don't want to have anything that'll cause a glare or reflection to give us away.
You mean we're going to go right into their camp?
Maybe. There's nothing makes a man more nervous than to wake up and find the gent next to him with his throat cut and his scalp gone.
Smoke grinned at Cal's wide-eyed expression.
Makes it a mite tough to get to sleep the next night, A tired man don't fight real well or think too clear.
The balance of the afternoon was spent setting more traps, undermining areas of the trail, and digging pits and placing sharpened stakes in the bottoms. Smoke was amazed at how quickly Cal grasped the ideas behind creating fear and terror in their enemies, and how innovative he was at thinking up his own surprises for the gang. At dusk, Smoke called a halt to their preparations, and they made camp a few miles from Smoke's fort. The hat-sized fire was small and placed up against some rocks so the flames couldn't be seen from more than a few yards away. Smoke cooked the last of Puma's venison, made pan bread and a pot of boiled coffee, which Cal said was considerably weaker than Puma's.
I want you to get some sleep tonight, and real mountain man coffee will keep somebody who isn't used to it awake for a spell, like 2 or 3 days.
Why'd you make so much? Ain't no way we're gonna drink all that.
I brought a couple of spare canteens. What we don't drink tonight, we'll put in those. Cold coffee ain't high on my list of favorite things to drink, but it'll keep us alert if we aren't able to make a fire to warm it.
Cal was about to answer when suddenly Smoke held up his hand. A Colt appeared in Smoke's fist as if by magic.
Keep talking like I'm still here.
Smoke slipped out of camp as silently as the breeze. Cal continued to talk until a few minutes later when Smoke reappeared, leading Pearlie's horse by the reins with a blushing Pearlie still in the saddle.
Cal, we're coming in, so don't shoot.
Cal holstered the Colt Navy he was holding up and stood up to welcome his friends back to camp.
Hey, Pearlie, glad you found us.
Shucks, I didn't find you. Smoke found me. I figured if I rode around up here making enough noise, y'all would hear me sooner or later.
What if it had been Sundance's gang who heard you?
Nah, I passed their camp over 5 miles down the mountain. You can't hardly miss it since they got a fire big enough to roast a cow. Although they seem to be drinking their supper instead of eating it.
It's good. Drunk and hungover men have a tendency to be careless about keeping their scalps in a fight. Did you get the Aldrich women down to Big Rock?
Yes, sir. Just missed meeting up with the outlaws, though.
Oh?
Yeah.
Pearlie squatted before the fire, piled some deer meat and bread and beans on his plate, and poured a cup of coffee. While he ate, he told Smoke and Cal about the gunfight in Big Rock.
I can't believe those fools tried to tree that town.
Well, I don't know if the fight was strictly the outlaws' idea, boss. Appears to me that Monte Carson and Louis Longmont set them up where they didn't exactly have any choice in the matter. Monty said the town wanted to soften them up a mite for you.
I certainly call killing a dozen hard cases softening them up, though I wish my friends hadn't taken such a chance on my account.
It turned out all right. Those gents will think twice about riding back through Big Rock anytime soon.
I don't intend to give them that chance, Pearlie. Every one of the sorry sons of bitches is going to be planted right here, in the up high, or I will.
You mean, we will, Smoke. Me and Pearlie are in this with you to the very end.
As the sun rose above eastern slopes of the Rockies, Sundance walked among his sleeping men, kicking them out of their bedrolls with the toe of his boot. The smell of frying fatback and coffee finally roused the unhappy gang. They crawled out of their bedrolls, shivering and shaking in the early morning chill as they gathered around a fire, gulping coffee, waiting for Sundance to give them their orders. He sat on a boulder, his hands wrapped around a steaming tin cup, elbows on knees. His gaze flickered over the ragtag group of misfits and murderers he'd brought with him while he thought about their forthcoming battle with Smoke Jensen. He realized most of his men would be useless. They were too dumb or too damn slow to be a danger to a mountain man. The only benefit to Sundance would be to draw attention to Smoke's location by drawing his fire. Sundance knew the gang stood no chance at all if they stayed together. 30 men on horseback would be noticed before they could get in range and would make a tempting target for ambushes and long-range rifle fire from cliffs and overhangs. He didn't like the idea of breaking up his followers, but there wasn't any other way to proceed in this country. Its thick forests, steep and narrow trails and passes were ideal for bottling up a large group or catching them in a crossfire if Smoke managed to bring help with him. Sundance had few options. Thus, he made the only decision he could.
Boys, I'm going to divide us up into groups of 4 to 6 riders. Each group will have a leader. We'll arrange meeting places and signals in the event anyone catches sight of Jensen or his trail. I'll also give each of you a password so we won't be shooting each other in the dark if it comes to that.
George Stalking Horse thumbed his hat back.
Boss, General Custer divided his troops, and you remember what happened to him?
You fool! Custer got his ass kicked because he was facing several thousand Injuns with nothing but a bunch of green soldiers. Most of them never been in an Injun fight before. George, just how do you expect 30 of us to cross these mountains and manage to sneak up on a man said to be one of the best mountain men in the territory? Anyone else got to try to tell me how to run this outfit? Bull, I want you and Toothpick and Elgato to pick some men to ride with. You'll be the leader, so pick boys you think you can work with and who'll obey orders.
Lightning Jack narrowed his eyes and flexed his huge arms until the muscles bulged beneath his shirt.
What about me, Sundance?
I want you to ride with me. I need someone I can trust to watch my back. Besides, you're the meanest son of a bitch on the mountain, and I want you between me and Smoke Jensen.
As chosen leaders began to pick their riders, it was only a few moments before Bull and Toothpick squared off in an argument over who would ride with them. Toothpick had the point of his knife at Bull's throat, even as Bull stuck his sawed-off shotgun in the other's stomach and jacked back the hammers.
God damn it! Hold on there! If you can't pick your bunches, then I'll do it for you. Elgato, you and Chiva and those three men ride together.
Sundance pointed to the three Mexican pistoleros.
Toothpick, you take George Stalking Horse and those three cowboys over there.
Sundance pointed to three of the southerners.
Baramorte, you take Curly Bill and those four men. One-Eyed Jordan, you and Blackjack Walker grab those men by that tree over yonder.
A Mexican and two Texas gunmen looked up from saddling their mounts and nodded agreement.
Bull, you take Moses Washburn and the four men standing next to that rock and make your plans. I'm taking Lightning Jack, Jeremiah Grey Wolf, and the two remaining cowboys with me. I'm only gonna say this once. Either you take orders from your ramrods or you die. By their hands or mine, it won't make much difference, because you'll be in hell before you know you're dead. I want the men in charge over here, and we'll decide who goes where, and what our signals will be if anybody runs across Jensen.
Sundance squatted next to the fire and refilled his cup. Elgato, Toothpick, Suarez, Jordan, and Bull gathered around him, warming their hands over the flames. The Sundance looked up, sipping his coffee. Snow-swollen clouds overhead emptied, and flakes began to fall. Within a few minutes, visibility was cut to less than 10 feet, and temperature seemed to be dropping 20 degrees.
Okay, man, here's our situation. We got a lot of mountain to cover and not a hell of time to do it if we want to kill Jensen and get down to the flats before full winter. Elgato, you and Chiva and your vaqueros head up the mountain on the main trail. Take your time and watch out for ambushes. Fire 3 shots if you see anybody or need some help.
Sundance pointed down their back trail.
One Eye, you and Blackjack start down the trail behind us. After you make sure Jensen ain't back there, ride north and go straight up the slope through the trees. It'll be rough going, but at least you won't have to worry about being bushwhacked. Toothpick, you and George Stalking Horse and your men head northeast toward the peak. See if that breed can manage to cut Jensen's tracks or pick up a trail on him. And don't try to take him alone if you find him. Give the signal and we'll all come riding hard as we can. I don't want that bastard getting away. Suarez, you and Curly Bill go upslope to the northwest and look for tracks or campfire smoke. Sing out if you see anything. Bull and Moses, take your men and head straight up the mountain. Spread out and cover as much territory as you can. Lightning Jack and Jeremiah Greywolf and I are going to roam, cutting back and forth across all your back trails. With any luck at all, we'll bracket that son of a bitch and catch him between us. And he'll be dead meat if he shows himself. Oh, by the way, tell your men that the shooter who puts the first lead pill in Jensen's hide will get a bonus of $5,000 paid when I see his body.
Smoke raised his head where he lay hidden in weeds and brush near the outlaw's encampment. He had heard every word of Sundance's plan, and now he knew the positions and numbers of each bunch of men searching for him. The outlaws mounted up and began to leave, talking quietly amongst themselves about their assignments and the $5,000 reward for Smoke's death. Bull and Moses Washburn's group was the last to leave camp, four men trailing their leaders through tall pines, riding single file. Moving silently through falling snow, Smoke pulled his knife from its scabbard and sprinted after the men. The last man in line leaned to the side to adjust his stirrup.
Howdy, neighbor. Tell me, is this worth $5,000?
Smoke pushed the dying man over his saddle horn and slapped his horse's rump with the flat of his hand, causing it to bolt forward. Smoke wiped his blade on his trouser leg and walked back through drifting snow, where he had left his rifle and mount. Jack Robertson was surprised and almost jumped out of his saddle when Micah Jacobs' horse galloped by him as he wound his way through thick stands of ponderosa pines. Robertson was trying to keep the riders in front of him in sight, squinting into driving snow flurries as they followed Bull up a steep slope. He glanced to one side as Jacob's mount brushed against his legs, and he could see the man leaning forward over his saddle horn as if he were too drunk to sit up.
God damn it, Micah, take it easy. You're gonna get us killed riding like that in these here trees.
Jacob didn't appear to hear the shouted warning, and his bronc continued to lope ahead, blundering into the next horse in line. Robertson spurred his mount and pulled up next to Jacobs, grabbing the frightened animal's reins and pulling it to a halt. Jacobs' horse crow-hopped a couple of times, causing its rider to slowly topple sideways out of the saddle.
Hey, Bull! You and Moses, wait up a minute! Micah's hurt back here!
He grabbed both horses' reins in one hand, calming the animals a moment, and then he walked to where Jacob lay face down on the ground.
You stupid son of a bitch! What's the matter with...
Vomit rose in his throat, and he almost threw up as the dead gunslick's head rolled back, exposing a neck slashed open to his spine. Blood and gore splattered over the front of his shirt.
Goddamn! Shit! Shit! Bull! Get over here quick! Micah's been killed!
Bull and the others appeared out of the driving snow like ghosts, further scaring the terrified cowboy.
What the hell's going on here?
Micah's gun got his throat cut! That bastard Jensen done killed him deader than hell!
How'd that happen? He's right behind you.
I don't know, Bull. I didn't hear nothing. I was just following along, and then his horse come running by with Micah dead in the saddle.
He didn't call out or yell or nothing?
I told you, I didn't hear nothing. We're fighting a ghost, boss, and we're all gonna end up like Micah if we don't get the hell out of here.
Bull quickly stepped over, grabbed Robertson by the shoulder, and spun him around.
Ah! Shut up, you sniveling coward. All this means is Jensen's drawing first blood. I still plan on collecting that $5,000 reward for killing him.
Robertson swung into his saddle and looked over his shoulder at Jacob's body, stiffening in the frigid air. His dead glazed eyes were slowly being covered with white flakes, and the gaping cavity in his neck was half filled with pink-tinged snow.
Bet that don't sound like near enough to Micah.
Cal was pouring himself a cup of coffee when he looked up through the fallen snow and saw Smoke squatting by their small campfire, hands extended to get some warmth. He hadn't heard him approach, not a single sound.
Want some coffee, Smoke?
Yeah, and some breakfast if Pearlie's left any.
There's a couple of sinkers and a hunk of fatback that Pearlie ain't had time to wolf down yet.
Pearlie looked at him over a plate of grub that he was eating. He was all hunched over, holding it against his chest to keep it from being covered by snow.
Only because I didn't have no more room in this tin. Lucky you got here before I went back for a second helping, Smoke.
More like a third or fourth helping, you mean. Smoke, even this fracas lasts more than a couple of days, we're going to have to send back to Big Rock for more supplies. Pearlie goes through food like a grizzly bear fattening up for the winter.
Well, that's only natural. Body needs more food up here in this awful cold. Hell, if and I don't eat, I'm liable to freeze plumb solid.
Don't gripe about the snow and cold, man. It's going to help even up the odds if it keeps up. It sure will bother those Flatlanders a lot more than it does us. It'll cover our tracks and muffle any sounds we make when we sneak up on them. Did you cover your mount's hooves with burlap like I told you?
Yes, sir. We're ready to ride as soon as you give the word.
While he ate, Smoke smoothed a patch of snow with his hand, then took a twig and began to draw a crude map of the mountain in it. He made two small marks with the stick.
This here is where we are, and this is where Sundance had his camp.
Pearly and Cal ambled over to watch him draw. Smoke made six fine lines on the sketch, curving off from the camp location at angles to one another.
Sundance divided his men up into groups of five or six men and sent them off in different directions.
Why'd he do that?
It's not a bad plan for a know-nothing outlaw. He hopes to cover a lot of territory in a short time. He knows winter's coming, and if his gang gets caught up in these slopes during a blizzard, they won't stand a chance of getting us.
Appears to me it'll also make it a lot tougher on us to move around without one of those groups cutting our trail or seeing our sign. Especially if the snow stays on the ground for any length of time.
You're right, Pearly. It's mighty tough to cover your tracks in fresh snow. Sundance was shrewd enough to spread his men out in different sections, so any tracks they come up on will have to be ours.
Jiminy Smoke, if that's so, then how are we going to manage to sneak around and engine up on them gunnies like you plan?
Well, don't you worry about that, son. Tracks are like women. They can seem to say one thing and mean exactly the opposite.
Huh?
I understand, Smoke. You mean the man being followed is in control. He can lead the ones following him anywhere he wants to.
That's the idea, Pearly. It's a situation made to order for setting up ambushes and traps. Our other advantage is that Sundance doesn't know about you and Cal. He thinks I'm up here without any help.
Smoke bent over his map.
Now, here's where I want you and Cal to go, and what I want you to do when you get there.
For the next hour, the three men planned their campaign of terror against the Sundance Morgan gang. When Smoke was satisfied his allies understood everything, he got up and stretched cramped muscles.
Okay, men. Now I want you to crawl into those blankets and get some shut-eye. We can't do anything until dark. Then, we're going to be busy most of the night. And I want you fresh and ready to go at sunset.
What if one of them bunches of gangs chances on our camp?
Don't worry about that. Those galoots will be lucky to make it more than 2 or 3 miles in this storm. Let them wear themselves and their mounts out fighting drifts and wind and cold. That just means they'll be sleeping heavier when we come calling on them later.
As the day wore on, the sun rose higher in the sky. But it couldn't penetrate snow clouds, and the temperatures stayed just above freezing. Flurries of wind-driven snow coated the outlaws' faces and entered their horses' nostrils, making their search a living hell. Several of the groups stopped their trek up the mountain and hobbled their mounts in the shelter of pines and made fires to try to keep hands and fingers from freezing. El Gato rode hunched over in his saddle, fighting his way along the main trail up the mountain. His men, strung out behind him, were barely visible through the white cloud that surrounded them. Julio Valdez spurred his mount and pulled up next to El Gato. His mustache and beard were coated with a thick layer of ice and snow. His face was windburned to bright red, and blood was trickling from chapped, cracked lips that had split open.
Jefe, momentito.
Si. What is it, Julio?
We must stop, Jefe. The storm, she is killing us. I no can feel my hands.
El Gato twisted in his saddle to look to the rear. His other men were waiting, hands stuffed under their armpits, shoulders hunched against wind chill.
Okay, it's time for food, and horses need rest.
Gato pulled his bronc around and began to walk it toward a small clearing a few yards off the trail. Valdez grinned as he rode alongside him. El Gato's mount stumbled over something buried in the snow, and a large pine branch suddenly whipped toward the pair of gunmen. El Gato pulled himself up on his right elbow. He looked up to see Valdez sitting on his mount, leaning against the branch, head thrown back and screaming in agony. A 2-foot-long sharpened stake was buried in his stomach, just below his rib cage. It was attached to the branch with strands of rawhide and had speared Valdez hard enough that several inches of the stake were protruding from his back.
God damn! Cut him down, now!
But Heavy, if we pull stake out, Julio die.
Juan, what you want to do? Leaving that the priest comes to give last rites? Cut him down! Make fire, muchachos. I'm very hungry.
Chiva held Valdez's shoulders while Gonzalez jerked the branch back, pulling the stake free. Gonzalez knelt beside his dead friend, laying a hand on his shoulder. After a moment, reaching into a pocket of Valdez's vest and pulling out a gold watch, he studied it briefly, then stuck it in his own pocket and stood, brushing snow off his pants legs. El Gato dumped an armload of wood on a fire his men had started.
Take his pistolas and ammunition and put in my saddlebags.
You want us to bury him?
No, drag him in the bushes away from camp and leave him. We make camp here and wait for this storm to pass. We begin looking again tomorrow.
El Gato built a roaring fire and everyone ate their fill of beans, tortillas, and jerked meat. After they ate, they sat in front of the fire, warming their hands and passing a bottle of tequila around until it was empty.
El Gato, do you want guards sent out esta noche?
No. No one can move in this storm in darkness. Get some sleep. We start fresh in morning.